live from Texas Barber College on Gessner for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bring you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, Batestown? Hey, how we doing?
He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. It is a Friday edition of the Killer Bees, broadcasting live from Texas Barber College on Gessner, the Gessner campus. And it's a Friday recap day as the Houston Texans fall yesterday at home to the Carolina Panthers 24-9. You're pretty close. You called 24-10. You're an extra point away, a missed extra point away from hitting it right on the nose.
But Sly Devil.
Yeah, Joey Sly, the kicker guy, missing the extra point. It didn't matter. Texans lose by 15. Didn't cover the spread for the first time all season long, too, so that well-coached teams cover the spread. Didn't apply in yesterday's game. But, look, the storyline heading into this one was Davis Mills. What is Davis Mills going to look like in his first career start? And I think it's about how we expected. Not very good.
I don't know that he was not very good. The more I was watching him, though obviously not the results that you wanted, the more I kept thinking about you completely writing him off and leaving him for dead and thinking, you know what? He actually looked mobile. He actually looked serviceable. He made some good throws. Look, the biggest problem I got is he's still staring down receivers. I mean, he's just absolutely laser focused on where the ball is going, and that seems to be an issue. But for the most part, I saw enough of him that I give him hope for being something in the future for this squad, and not quite as doomsday as you.
I would say that he did look mobile, but whenever he used his mobility, he wasn't great throwing on the run. Like, he didn't create any plays downfield after he did that. He did elude the rush better than I thought he would. There's a couple times he stepped into the pocket, let the defenders go around him. I thought he did a good job of that. I agree with that. But he didn't really complete passes after he did that. It was also one of the worst offensive games the Houston Texans have had in a really long time. 193 total yards. Like, yeah, he didn't turn the ball over. Yes, the game plan was very boring. It was a terrible situation for a young quarterback, let's be honest. I felt bad for Davis Mills at times last night because he's going up against what is currently the number one defense in the NFL, what is currently the number one defense in the NFL in terms of sacks. It's a short week. It wasn't a good situation for Davis Mills. Third game into his career, making his first start as a rookie against a really good D. I thought at times he looked all right. Whenever they went with tempo at the end of the first half, whenever they were forced to go tempo after the game kind of got out of reach, I thought he looked better whenever there was tempo involved with Davis Mills, and I think that that's something the Texans will use going forward with Davis Mills a little bit more.
I think when you look at the overall, this is exactly what we expected. We didn't have all these grandiose expectations going into last night's game. It's a short week. He got thrown into the fire a half into the Cleveland game when he didn't expect it. Not the ideal set of circumstances for a young rookie quarterback trying to get his wits about him in the NFL, so a lot of that was to be expected, but the fact that they were in the ball game and an extra point away from being tied at the half gave you some hope in the fact that, and then when McCaffrey goes out, and then they lose Horn on the defensive side, and you're like, okay, wait a minute. This might be one of those perfect storm games where things start to structurally fall right in there for you in the course of a game, and a game that you didn't think or weren't sure you were going to be in and was going to be winnable, you could be right there in the end, and then in the second half, everything just changed. It just didn't seem like they made enough adjustments at half to put them where they needed to be. Obviously, Culley doesn't go for it in Carolina territory on the 39 on fourth down. He can give you all the excuses in the world. 2 weeks in a row now with a Bill O'Brien-type decision where you're scratching your temple going, why?
I thought a lot of it in the second half, too, was they didn't want to put too much on Davis Mills' plate. And I don't know if that was a smart thing or a bad thing. Like, I'm not going to look at the second half and say, well, they didn't make adjustments. It's a poorly coached team. I don't want to label that on them because it was a quarterback in a tough spot, short rest, making his first ever start. But it was a game at the half. I mean, Carolina was up 7-6. It was my survivor pick. I picked the Panthers in my survivor pool. I was nervous watching that game. 7-6 at the half. Christian McCaffrey got hurt. The offense for Carolina did not look good there for a little while. They made the adjustments. I thought Sam Darnold looked really good in the second half.
You know what? He's in a really good situation for the first time in his career. That's why there's another guy I was not willing to write off, because for all the people that said, look, he might be a bridge quarterback, he's a guy that Rule's going to use till he gets a guy he really wants, I wasn't sold on that simply because of the fact that when I looked at him and what we've talked about, first time you've been through how many coaches, how many offensive coordinators, how many different situations where it changes year in, year out, where you're like, give this guy some weapons, give him a stable coaching staff in a good organization, and give him the confidence that, hey, you're our guy, and we want you to succeed, And then lo and behold, he can, he does, he will. I mean, I think that the way you watched him run the offense last night, he's only going to get more and more comfortable, because it takes you, you know, even Brady said, a year to eight weeks of the season when you go to a new team to really start finally grasping all the elements of the offense, terminology and whatever. I expect him to continue to get better. I expect that, depending on how long McCaffrey's out with this injury, that there is enough there for him to work with now where he can feel comfortable, move the football, and do some things for this football team.
I made sure I wanted to come in today, and look, what Davis Mills did yesterday was not good. I mean, that's a quarterback performance that you can't win with that in the NFL. That game's not going to define his career. So the things you said were there could be development. There could be some glimpses of positive that you can take for that game that he can use for his future. I think that could be true, but yesterday was not a good performance. You can't win with a quarterback performance like you got yesterday from the Texans. A lot of that was because they dumbed down the playbook for him and didn't really, you know, put a lot on his plate, I think because they were a little worried about putting a lot on his plate. Here was Davis Mills after the game on his assessment of his own performance.
I always think back on that quote, it's never as bad as you think it was, and it's never as good as you think it was. There were obviously a couple plays I'd like back. I'm going to come in tomorrow, watch the film, and see what we can improve on, but also see what we did well to move forward.
Pretty profound from a Stanford guy. It's never as good as it seems, and it never as bad as it seems.
No, and I think you're right, you know, from the standpoint of, look, they weren't going to put him in a compromised position to fail. They weren't going to put too much on his plate in a short week and expect him to be Harry Houdini and just perform magic over and over throughout the game. They wanted to do the most simplified offense they could in a short week to keep the ball moving, to keep him from making big mistakes, and to give the team a chance to stay in the ball game late where they have an opportunity maybe possibly to sneak out a victory. But no matter what happens, they don't embarrass themselves. They don't give Carolina gifts so that it's an easy game for them. And they manage the situation. I think, granted, it's Buffalo, but now that you've got 10 days, now you're going to see a little bit of a different scenario for this quarterback in this team when he's got a lot of practice time, when he can not only watch the film, but he can get with the coaches, he can work with the first team, he can do a lot of things. I just have so many other questions than Davis Mills, because I understand you being critical of the fact that it wasn't just a stellar performance. But, like, we said Mark Ingram had to carry the ball and be effective for this team to do things. Early on, he had some good runs, and then all of a sudden, he's not even a factor. He's not even in the game. Lindsey's your guy. Lindsey gets more carries at the end of the night than Mark Ingram does way far less with it. And you're scratching your temple going, what is that? Why? And is it a showcase deal? But give me some kind of explanation. Forget fourth down on the Carolina 39.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, give me the reasons why Mark Ingram wasn't continuing to get the ball.
I guess if I'm playing devil's advocate, and to answer your question, I would say it was game script and kind of the way the game was going there in the fourth quarter and late in the second half, or whenever you were going to more of a spread out offense a little bit. Lindsey's in more of the passing downs than Mark Ingram.
But Lindsey was carrying the football.
Yeah, I mean, you'll run the ball out of some passing formations, and sometimes you want to get good chunks of yardage out of it. He didn't. 5 yards, 7 carries. Look, the offense was just bad in period. The running game was worse than Davis Mills was. I mean, 42 yards on 17 carries, 2.5 yards per carry. I think it's two things. One, I think it speaks to Carolina's defense, which is really good, in my opinion. And then it also speaks to the Texans' offense. It's not very good. And I also think the game plan for Carolina was, let's make Davis Mills beat us. Let's slow down the running game for the Texans. We know that they want to run the football. Let's eliminate that element from it and force Davis Mills to beat them. And Davis Mills wasn't able to do that. David Culley, after the game, kind of like you, was not unhappy with the performance of his rookie.
I thought he did very well. He did not turn the ball over at all, which was a big thing going into the game. I thought he threw the ball very well. I thought when we went on a two-minute offense right before half, he did an excellent job of taking us down the field and making some nice throws and nice plays. And I thought he did a nice job for us.
So that was David Culley on Davis Mills. One more on David Culley. Explains why the offense was so conservative yesterday with their rookie QB. And that's one thing that you were able to notice watching that game, was just how conservative they were,
sure.
And especially in the second half. I mean, once you got down by a couple of possessions, you would think, okay, let's spread this out. Let's open it up. Let's let Davis Mills throw it. Brandon Wheaton was on the bench yesterday. He said, sometimes rookie quarterback, let's go four wide so I can see the field. We didn't see that yesterday from the Texans.
No, but what you did see a lot of movement, a lot of things because they were cognizant and concerned about the fact that the edge rush and the pressure. A couple times, Mark Ingram early on with a great pickup block on a blitz coming right down the middle that would have annihilated Davis Mills. So they were really, really cognizant of the fact that there was going to be an outside pass rush. Their athleticism and speed was going to be shown in the way that they put pressure on the quarterback, like to your point, to basically say, you have to beat us, and you're going to have to beat us with our guys doing their best job of trying to distract you. So it was. It was a dummy down offense. It was simplified to the umpteenth degree. But I still wasn't disappointed because he was athletic for a guy with his size. Because he didn't try and do too much and throw into double coverage and a lot of bad passes. One thing that we know for sure is Brandon Cooks, whether he remains on this team for the rest of the season or not, Brandon Cooks has value.
Yep.
And for all the people that have devalued him and sent him from team to team to team, though they've gotten first-round picks for him and things like that in the past, this dude can play. And he is one of the quietest best receivers in this game that veteran teams fighting for a Super Bowl could really find a use for.
He's had a bizarre career because he's been traded a couple of times for first-round draft picks. So you know he's valued around the league. If you're spending a first-rounder to trade for him, then he must have value around the NFL. But he is being slept on. I think a lot of it's because of this offense. And look, DeAndre Hopkins leaving a couple of years ago, he was kind of supposed to be the replacement, so to speak. And those are large shoes to fill. Here was David Culley talking about how conservative they were with Davis Mills.
You know, there are certain things that we wanted to make sure that we kept him comfortable, and I think the start of the game we did that. I don't think it was being conservative. It was just that going into the game we had some plays we wanted to run with him to make sure he got the ball out and make sure that he was comfortable and getting his rhythm.
So he didn't like that word conservative a whole lot. He didn't like being asked how conservative were you offensively. That bothered him a little bit.
There's a ton of different terms you can use, but let's just be clear that they were more than a little bit nervous about putting too much on his plate and having him cough it up early.
Houston, what did you think of the game plan last night from the Texans? What did you think of the rookie quarterback, Davis Mills? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, the number to call, number to text. We're out at Texas Barber College, the Gessner campus, giving away college football tickets. James Coney, hot dogs are outside as well. Load up on those, and five-time world champion Booker T hanging out with us as well. When we come back, another questionable decision by David Culley. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Texas Barber College on Gessner. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Darnold's going to keep and get it into the end zone for the touchdown. All eyes to McCaffrey. And Sam Darnold takes it in, his second rushing touchdown of the year.
Sam Darnold getting it done on the ground yesterday with a pair of touchdowns. That one was his first. Christian McCaffrey still in the game for the first one. Later, pull his hamstring. Matt Rhule in his Monday morning presser said he's going to miss a few weeks. So it looks like he might be going on the IR, miss a few games, and then come back for Carolina. Carolina in a good spot, though, 3-0.
You hear Troy Aikman compare Christian McCaffrey's thighs to Earl Campbell?
I did.
I mean, okay, I get it that the guy works out and he does a lot of, you know, squats and leg work. Do we need a refresher course on Earl Campbell's lower body before you say Christian McCaffrey in the same sentence?
No, yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that comp. Sometimes we grade the comps around here. That one was about a 1 because Earl Campbell's lower body versus Christian McCaffrey's lower body. Like, if we're being serious about it, 1, it's not even close. 2, if you want to be funny about it, it's not even close. We're out to Texas Barber College. Swing on by 8201 South Gessner, giving away tickets to the U of H Navy football game tomorrow. Free lunch, too. Lunch is on us. James Coney Island Hot Dogs. Great place, too. If you're thinking about a new career, why don't you check out Texas Barber College, texbarber.edu. They're training new barbers every day. Classes start as soon as next week. So come pay them a visit, or you can check them out online, texbarber.edu. Last week when we were talking about the Houston Texans, we were talking about the very questionable decision by David Culley by declining an offsides penalty, punting the ball into the end zone. He basically punted on a third down and 10 whenever you break it down. Maybe not as egregious as that one, but yesterday, facing a 4th and 4 at the 39, he was down by 1. The Panthers 39, I should say. Early the third quarter, down by 1 point, he decided to punt on 4th and 4. There are three options there, Joel. One, you kick a long field goal, 56 right. yards, maybe out of Joey Sly, the kicker guy's range. Two is punt. Three is go for the first down and keep the drive alive. Which of the three do you pick? Which one's last?
I'm going for it for sure. Look, I mean, Sly is a guy that even Aikman knows that has a powerful leg that you would have had, indoors you would have had a chance to make it. But look at what the trend is in the NFL these days. It's a newfound way of thinking about offensive football. And one of the things everybody's doing, including doing it in their own end even sometimes in short yardages, you go for it. And you know you're in a situation where you're in a tough game, you're going to need every point possible, and you're not going to be able to give up, cough up possessions, whether it be from a turnover standpoint or from the standpoint that you know your rookie quarterback's not probably going to put a whole lot of points on the board. So if you have an opportunity like that, and you know that your defense has been pretty decent, they've been allowing the offense to get back on the field, they've been kind of holding down Carolina from doing anything big, how do you not go for it there?
Yeah, it was unexplainable to me. I was even thinking to kick the field goal. It might be out of range, but hey, you make the field goal, all of a sudden you do have the lead. So that was an option there as well. Punting would be the last thing I would do. Here was David Culley's explanation after the game.
Well, I felt like if we'd have got anything on that play at all, we got it down to 4th and 2 or 4th and 1, we'd have went for it. But with 4th and 5, I wanted to back them up and felt like we'd get them backed up and get a stop and then get them off the field and get good field position.
So there was
Then change the play before. Then make sure, what are you going to blame it on Tim Kelly? I mean, the fact of the matter is that's what you, if that was what your vision was, then the play that you call previously isn't trying to get the first down. The play you call prior to that is trying to get just a couple of yards, whether it's an edge run or you open up a hole, moving the pocket out on a RPO, something like that. But just get a couple of yards instead of putting it in a predicament like that and then using that as an excuse.
One of the things I've learned about Culley through three games, he likes to punt. He searches for reasons to punt. He punts on 3rd and 10. So, yes, he's going to punt on 4th and 4 from the Carolina 39-yard line.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I guess he's enamored with the newfound way that Australian rules football players kick the ball, and he wants to get more into that, so maybe in practice one day he can get good at it. I don't understand it at all. Last week was a complete and total embarrassment in the way that went down. But this, though not as bad, is more of a factor in what you're talking about in the end result of the game. You get a first down there. You keep the chains moving. You're guaranteeing yourself points regardless. And you get yourself a chance to really establish into the ball game and send a message to Carolina. We're not going away, and we're going to be aggressive whether our quarterback is a rookie or not. We're going to do the things necessary to stay in this ball game and make sure you've got to work for it. Instead, it's almost like they were throwing in the towel. They're like, yeah, you know what? We're not doing too much. We're not risking too much, and for this one, we're probably just going to kick it.
You know, he's a first-year head coach, and I get that he's learning on the fly, but you can still criticize people that are learning on the fly. You can still criticize first-year head coaches. If the Texans were a good team, we'd be criticizing it even more. I think the fact no one has any expectations about the Texans gives them a little bit of a free pass here. But through three games, he's made two really bad decisions, punting on 3rd and 10 last week and then punting on 4th and 4 at the Carolina 39 this week. He's also extremely conservative. Don't ask him about that because he gets a little bit defensive about how conservative he is offensively. Like, you got to be aggressive. You got to score points. The offense is struggling. This is really one of the only times you've been on the plus side of the 50. Like, you can't just kick it away.
Regardless of your first-year head coach or not, you've got enough practice time, whether you've had barbecues instead of practices or called off training camps or whatever you've done. You know there's a couple plays within your arsenal of plays in your playbook that are guaranteed to get you positive yards. Those are the ones that you know you feel confident, no matter who your quarterback is, that you can go and you can get yourself the 3-4 yards in a really tight situation or in a necessary scenario. That's what you know that you have. The fact that you didn't have anything you felt confident enough to go, you know what, I might not get 10, I might not get 12, I might not, blow the top off the defense on this one, but I know I can get 5 yards here. That worries me as well, because regardless of the quarterback, Mark Ingram, or you put someone in motion, you do a jet sweep, you do something where you use Cooks on a quick slant, or you get them open quickly on some kind of an out route. There's got to be a situation where you see it based on if it's a man-to-man coverage or a zone coverage. You know the receivers might have a pad. That's all you need. But there's got to be a couple plays in your arsenal that you feel confident you could get something from. The fact that he didn't feel that either or do that worries me.
Yeah, they were not very confident in their offense. They could pick up those 4 yards, but super conservative. conservative there for David Culley. Got a texter, 713-780-3776, saying if this was Bill O'Brien and he went for it in that situation, you would criticize that too. Nope, that's just good football. That's good football going for it, fourth and four at the Carolina 39. So you can't just put words in our mouths
exactly.
Well, we totally disagree with it. If it was any coach punting in that situation, we would have criticized it. Any coach going for it in that spot, we would have said, hey, it's good football, good decision.
And let me counter that by saying, if you're Bill O'Brien, you're doing that in the Chiefs game, in a game that is the entire season for you, and you're doing it on your own end of the field, or you're doing something really stupid in the process. This one, you're doing it to show, hey, we understand we're big underdogs. We understand no one gives us a chance to win. But understand this from us. We're not backing down, and we're going to do whatever we can to try and win this football game. That would be the big difference. If Bill O'Brien went there, I'd give him more credit for having the cojones to do something like that in a very much underdog situation, as opposed to the Chiefs game when you are in a position of massive strength, you have a big lead, all you've got to do is just mind your P's and Q's, and then you just start trying to throw hero ball all over the place.
Do you think Bill O'Brien goes for it in that spot?
I think he does.
I do too.
I really do.
I think he goes for it. Bill O'Brien was not as conservative as we have seen from David Culley so far. I got another texter, 713-780-3776, about Davis Mills. Do you remember Watson's first game on Thursday night against the Bengals? He actually came in late in that game against Cincinnati. That was his first start. He came in late in the week one game against Jacksonville, started against Cincinnati in the Thursday night game, was 15-24, 125 yards. Had a very similar game than Davis Mills had. I wouldn't consider Davis Mills to be on the same level as Deshaun Watson in terms of potential skill, promise that you would have for him. Look, I think you can take glimpses of Davis Mills' game yesterday and hope that that translates into being a solid quarterback in the NFL. If you were to grade that one game last night in a vacuum, Davis Mills was not good, and any quarterback play in any NFL game ever is not – you're not going to win a game with the play you got yesterday. Has to improve, obviously. Room to improve.
Again,
first
gonna,
game, so you have to grade it on a curve. But if you're playing like that, you're not winning.
I'm going to push back on that. There is ways that a quarterback playing the way he played last night could win, but it's doing so with a team that's surrounded by weapons, with a good offensive line, with a really tough running back and a couple of receivers. You could see a quarterback manage the game because, you know what, he's a Stanford kid. He's smart. You can tell in the way we played some of his quotes already that, you know what, he's a guy that can pick up a system. He can understand what his job is and how to execute it best, not making rash decisions, but keeping it within the context of the play. He's an ultimate game manager. The ultimate high ceiling for this guy, because you and I keep going back and forth on this. I'm not going to close the book on him, say he's done, saying he's not going to be a quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm not either.
But at his best, he's going to be a game manager. He's not going to win a game with his legs. I don't care what the wheelhouse says he ran his 40 time in. He's not going to be a guy. Believe me, I understand those. He's not going to be a guy like Deshaun that gets out of the pocket and runs, gets you yards, extends plays, make things happen. He's not going to be a guy that all of a sudden from his back pocket throws a 60-yard ball in the air and gets you a chunk play. What he can do is take the system, take the plays the coaches give him, and execute them the way they're supposed to be executed.
We're out of Texas Barber College, the Gessner campus. Lunch on us. Swing on by. Get some James Coney hot dogs. Also giving away tickets. Chance to win tickets to U of H Navy tomorrow night at TDECU Stadium. Booker T's in attendance as well. Coming up next, Tim Murray, co-host of the Nightcap on VSiN Live, joins the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5. And ESPN 92.5. Actually, we're going to talk more about this game whenever we return. Also, we'll go around the NFL. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Look, if you're looking for authentic Italian food, I know there's a lot of authentic Italian restaurants across town, but you know what? When you go in your part of town, it's really a commercialized chain that's trying to just basically take what they've done and serve people across Houston. It's not like that at Frankie's Italian Kitchen, because Frankie's Italian Kitchen is authentic, made from scratch, daily Italian food. It is the best food you're going to find, Italian food, in this city. If you're in the Richmond, Fulshear, Sugar Land area, you have got to get to Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Check them out, frankiesitaliankitchentx.com. Better yet, go and stop in and see them. They got the original pizza ovens. That's what they were known for first, but once you went there once, you wanted to keep going back and try other things on the menu. Now they call it Italian Kitchen, so it encourages you to try everything on the menu. It's a family environment. You come in, you feel like you can make yourself at home. You don't leave empty, whether it's your stomach or your wallet, because the prices are affordable. And you're going to leave filled up and full knowing you had some unbelievable food. Chris Smith, not only the owner, he's the guy that's the chef that prepares the food, and he does it better than anybody else. You got to get in there today. Tell him I sent you by. You're going to be back a time or two, and know every time you need Italian food, there's only one place to think about. It's Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Texas Barber College on Gessner. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Welcome back. Broadcasting live from Texas Barber College, the Gessner campus, giving away college football tickets, lunch on us, James Coney Island, and Booker T, who is out here as well, joining us now. Booker, help us make a comparison here. Davis Mills, rookie quarterback for the Houston Texans, made his first ever start yesterday.
Yeah.
You've seen green guys in the wrestling business. How long does it take them to get used to, you know, performing at a high level?
You got to understand the pressure that kid is under. I mean, he's in the NFL now. I mean, playing college compared to the NFL is totally a different animal, and you got to understand the pressure. So I can't really say he got an F or anything like that, because you put any rookie in that situation, they may have the same outcome.
Yeah, you look at it too, Booker, because the thing that I think about too is the fact that there's so many other elements. Coming from Stanford is one thing. When you get into the NFL, it's not just about what you have to do in your locker room or with your coaching staff. It's a national TV game. The national media wants a piece of you. Everything that you say and do is going to be scrutinized, and that weighs in your day. I mean, your whole preparation, everything like that, has totally changed because there's so much more involved, because everything's circled around money and attention and media.
I mean, not just that. I mean, you got to look at the Texans from a whole rebuilding perspective. I mean, J.J. Watt, I mean, look at the situation. I mean, pretty much aged out. Hopkins, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, letting that guy go was a huge mistake. And then our quarterback situation, that's a total different, you know, area right there.
Yeah.
But it's something that we really need to talk about more than anything, because not having a quarterback of that caliber in that position is a huge loss for Houston. More importantly, not having a player on defense like J.J. Watt, that's a huge a position we're putting ourselves into. So, guys, we had a total rebuilding perspective as far as the Texans coach. Let's just get it out there. Right now, we got a long way to go.
Two-time WWE Hall of Famer Booker T, our very own Booker T, joining us at Texas Barber College, the Gessner campus. Come by, come say hello. What was the biggest rookie mistake you've seen in the wrestling ring? You don't have to mention names if you don't want to, but if you do,
you know, rookie,
that's fine.
Rookie mistakes in the wrestling ring is totally different than rookie mistakes on the football field. The rookie mistakes in professional wrestling, it all falls under the umbrella of going out there and working from a performance standpoint. Your performance may have not been right tonight. We could fix that, but going out there on the field, your performance not being right on a weekly basis, you're going to get fired. You're going to get replaced. That's the difference between football and professional wrestling.
Isn't it also, too, you got to own up to your peers as well? It's not just your own individuality and what you do to do your job. It's how it affects others, too. If you let yourself down, you're letting your others down, whether it be in wrestling or in football or anything else, especially when you're, like I said, when the spotlights are on you and you are there to perform. If someone slips up and it's their carelessness, it's affecting all of you guys.
I mean, if you mess up, I look bad, no matter what. And that's what we're in the situations with the Texans right now. No matter what that kid does, everything is going to fall back on him at the end of the day. So, like I said, that's the responsibility that any quarterback get put in. He better be ready for the scrutiny more than anything. That's the part that he's going to have to handle, the scrutiny, the pressure from social media, people saying, man, replace him, get him out of there, do it now. Like I say, it's the growing pains. He's going to have to deal with that.
This is what I wanted to ask you, because having worked with the Rockets for a long time and seen guys before the elements of social media go at a Barkley and say, when they see him out or something like that, and think they're tough. But then you get, and I've heard you and Brad talk about this on the air, and Brad actually have to go tell Twitter, hey, slow down. If you're not going to say it to someone's face, then don't do that on Twitter. How do you think you would have been affected? First of all, how do you handle the social media aspect of it now with people that are cowardly keyboard warriors that think they're tough? And then how would you have handled it when you were in your heyday?
You know, I get buried on social media. But, you know, those are people who just read the headlines from, you know, some clickbait. They are people that don't really know me or anything like that. So I tend to let it just go over my head. Back in the day, I think I would have dealt with it the same way. I think about the business first and foremost. I think about what's at the end of the day is most important. And that is going out there and getting the job done by any means necessary. Getting that check at the end of the day, more importantly, that's a cherry on top. But just making sure every T is crossed and every I is dotted.
Don't you feel that's what most athletes don't get right away, especially early on in their career, is the bigger picture is you got 10 times more to lose than some guy living in his mom's basement that feels like all of a sudden he's got a little confidence.
Well, you know, everybody coming into the league is not a star, you know. Sometimes, you know, guys come in the league and they're good players, but they got to be able to make it in the locker room before they ever have a chance at making it, you know, on the field. You know, you look at Tom Brady coming in, replacing Bledsoe back in the day, getting that opportunity and knowing how good he was and say, man, I'd be damned if I'm giving up this position forevermore. I'm going to go down as the greatest. So it's all about – preparation. Preparation is the only luck you're ever going to get.
WWE Hall of Famer Booker T joining us over at Texas Barber College. You mentioned you get buried on Twitter. Weren't you buried the other day for something you said about CM Punk?
Yeah, man. The thing is, I always talk from, fans, they're fickle. I mean, they're going to go with the guy that they love. but I'm always talking from a constructive criticism perspective because I got students. I got kids that look up to me, and I got kids that's going to get in this business. And they may be in that same position as Punk was on that night. And I need them to make the right decision and know that all the time when the red light is on, you are acting, and you go out there and you give me a Shakespearean performance. It's never about you, the person, when you're on television, when the red light is going. That's what my point was. It was not to bury CM Punk or anything like that.
I'm curious your thoughts on this. I'm looking for the right term for it because it's not boxing, it's not UFC. Now suddenly it's the made-for-pay-per-view actors and otherwise. And
the
suddenly,
Paul brothers.
The Paul brothers in particular, but even getting Floyd involved with, and Merriweather. And the fact that suddenly you have to be concerned about the sweet science of boxing or the popularity of UFC because now suddenly some guy in his living room might want to spend $49.99 to watch some exhibition as opposed to two guys that are busting their tails trying to really make a living.
You know, I don't look at it that way. I look at, companies like Matchroom Boxing, PBC Top Rank. It's been a monopoly in boxing for so long where the best fighters never get a chance to fight the best fighters. It's always been about the money and how much they can make opposed to the actual fighter. So companies like this coming along give the fighter actually so much more power to actually go out there and say, to hell with the championship, give me a big check. Because at the end of the day, I think that's more important.
But it makes it harder for those guys coming up that don't have that name yet to try and do what you're saying, as opposed to some guy that's some internet sensation, and suddenly because he's got so many followers, someone's going to want to see him put the gloves on.
And that's where it's a sink or swim mentality. The fighter that come out of the Olympics that win the gold medal, he has no problems. The fighter that goes out there and entertain and give you exactly what you want to see, like a Gervonta Tank Davis, he's going to sell out each and every time he shows up. So I think it's about the fighters being able to go out there and perform at that elite level in order to go out there and get paid that elite paycheck. That's
but don't
just
you
my
think,
opinion.
Like the old school heavyweights, though, it's not just about how well you fight in the ring. It's how you market yourself from the press conferences.
Exactly my point. Muhammad Ali made more money as the heavyweight champion more than the previous four heavyweight champions combined because he was entertaining.
Yeah.
How much would it take for you to get in the ring?
It's not enough money.
I was just thinking to myself how much somebody would have to pay me to take a punch from you. And that's pretty high, too, Booker.
No, man. You know, it's a young man's game, man. I had my time in the sun, man. I love watching the young guys go out and do their thing. Just like here at the Barber College, these young guys, making a way as far as creating, having that that trade, professional wrestling was my trade. This right here, if you learn how to do barbering, it would take you through life. And it's a pretty prosperous deal, too. So I encourage young people out there that's listening to the show, get down here, man. Be a part of something.
Yeah, training new barbers every day. Classes start as soon as next week. If you can't make it out here to Texas Barber College, right at Gessner, make sure you check them out online at texbarber.edu. Booker, before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you your favorite match of all time.
You know, it's hard, man. Winning the heavyweight championship was a moment I never dreamed or anything like that. I never dreamt that. I never did it for that. But when I found myself in the ring, getting ready to, you know, perform for the World Heavyweight Championship, it was a night that I'll remember. It was a controversial night, of course, back at the beach. But I walked away the heavyweight champion, and it changed my life. It changed my career. And right now, I'm trying to do the same thing with young people as far as, you know, with my wrestling school. Change their life. Change, you know, how they look at life. And you never know what life can bring you.
Well, Booker, thanks so much for stopping in. We have to get on the golf course again here pretty
soon.
Hey,
man, I'm shooting in the 80s, man. I'm shooting. I'm trying to break 70.
You can take
I'm trying
our money
to break then. In the 70s, okay. Guys. So have your money ready. Yeah. Have your money ready.
If you're shooting in the 80s, you're going to be taking our money. All right, coming up next, we go around the NFL, get you set for week 3 in the National Football League. Next on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Right now, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about MyBookie, because I've been telling you, if you're looking for a safe and secure way to put your money down and get involved betting on games, there's only one place to go. It's MyBookie. MyBookie.ag right now. You sign up, and I'll tell you what, for new and existing customers, for former customers, and for current customers, up to $1,000. You put money in your account, they're going to match it. That means you put $100 in your account, you got $200 to play with, more games to bet. More money to bet with, more games to play, more chances to win. This Saturday, as we were just talking about the fight game, MyBookie.ag is in on that UFC First Blood promotion that they've created. Any fighter on the main card bleeds, you win. The second you see blood, you could get paid. The bet is centered around five-minute main card bouts, including two title fights. You know the octagon is not going to stay dry for long with these kind of battles going on all night long. Nick Diaz has bled in three of his last four fights. Robbie Lawler normally likes to draw some blood or give some blood. So therefore, you know you got to be in on it. MyBookie.ag, click on Odds Boost for the First Blood promotion, and you can get in, and it's going to be something you want to keep an eye on. Also, use that promo code BET975 when you sign up. Not only does it double your first deposit, they also have another thing going on right now, a $50,000 NFL Survivor Pool. That's right. You can double your first deposit, get in on the Survivor Pool, also get in on that First Blood promotion, and it's all because you're betting your money on MyBookie. MyBookie.ag. You bet, you win, you get paid. That's one thing. The other thing is bet anywhere at any time. Just make sure you go to the one place you do that with, mybookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from Texas Barber College on Gessner, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
This week's really challenging because they have good players in the secondary and they have a good front. We lost to them last year. And, you know, they've been one of the top-rated defenses in the league. They're one of the greatest defensive players of all time. So everything about this week is challenging. Really good defense, really good offense. We got a long ways to travel. It's a big game for both of us.
It's America's game of the week. Tampa Bay Buccaneers heading to L.A. to face the Rams Sunday afternoon. Rams getting a point. They're a home dog in the NFL. A good team, too. 55.5 point total. Did you hear what Brady said, by the way, about Belichick? He was asked about Alex Guerrero, what he said about how Bill Belichick never really gave Brady the respect, treated him like a 20-year-old kid, not like a 40-year-old man. And Brady just, like, completely non-answered it. He's like, oh, yeah, I admire my time that I had in New England.
Yeah, I mean, at least he's doing the right thing. I give Ryan Clark on ESPN this morning a whole lot of credit because he goes, you know what that is? That's Tom Brady's trainer trying to put his name in the news one more time because he's not Tom Brady. He's trying to get a little extra love, a little extra exposure, because otherwise the only guy that should be talking about what did and didn't happen and how it happened in New England is Tom Brady or Bill Belichick.
Do you see it that way, though? Or do you see it where, like, Guerrero and Brady's dad are, like, basically the hype guys for Tom Brady, and that's like the Tom Brady truth serum? Because, like, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, he was saying, well, at least Aaron Rodgers will speak his own mind and say the things he has to say and doesn't have his trainer and his dad to go out and say it himself.
Well, you look at Deshaun Watson. You want rap lyrics and his party that comes out and tells you how he's feeling and he never really says it? Is that what you're talking about? Because at the same time, Brady plays it smart. He leaves his social media people that do his Twitter and everything like that to put out the videos and the hype train that everybody wants to get involved in. You don't have to hear the negativity from him. It's the same way when he said in a press conference 99% of the time he's BSing you and he's not going to tell you how he really feels, because he knows if he told you how he really feels, he's going to be offending someone. He could be taking money out of his own pocket because of the fact that he's all about endorsements and other things too, so he lets others do it for him. It's just from his trainer's standpoint, I hear this, I see this, and I go, you know what? You got all the money you got from Tom Brady, but no one needs to hear from you about Tom Brady, because you and your and his dad, I get it, there's a personal connection and there's probably some feelings involved there too. But at the same time, that game's coming up right after the Rams game, okay? You got the Patriots on the schedule. Everyone is going to pay attention to it, and everyone's going to want more of this hype train to continue. But let it come from the guys that were involved, not like the second and third connections in the degrees of separation.
During the week drama going on with Tom Brady, but that game, I'm really looking forward to that one. I'm glad that it has that. It's not a primetime game, not Sunday Night Football, not Monday Night Football, but it has the game of the week, so you can
How
watch
could it,
of
not
course.
Be,
I mean, I guess Fox. I think Fox gets like a certain amount of vetoes, right? Like, I don't know how exactly like the product works where they have like this broadcast draft on these NFL games, but I know Fox gets like a certain amount of no, you can't take this one, no, you can't take this one, and then obviously this was one of the no, you can't have this ones. I like the Rams in this game. They started off as one point favorites, they're now 1 point dogs. The line switched the other way. I think the Rams have more to prove in this game. Like, Tampa Bay is the defending champion. Yes, well, every team wants to win, but defending champion, they're not going to be as desperate as the Rams are to prove, you know, to make a statement in the league and show that they're as good as Tampa Bay and that they can be taken seriously as a Super Bowl contender.
I think there's a lot of elements and there's a lot of truth to what you said that I was thinking about too. He mentions it and it's right. The first and foremost thing is you're traveling. You're traveling to a different time zone. You're traveling across the country, literally. That's going to play a factor. Then the fact that, like you said, you've got the Rams trying to make a statement that we want to get where you are. I mean, the King, we're on top of the mountain if you're Tampa Bay. You got to knock us off. So we don't need the hype train. We don't need any extra motivation because we're just going for two and we're minding our business and our P's and Q's and we got all our guys back. If you're Jalen Ramsey, you know you're going to be bumping your gums all game because you're going to make a statement not only with your play, but the fact that we're here now. You know what? The champ is there, but we're here to take that championship from you. Aaron Donald, he's going to be fired up. The fact that you've got Matt Stafford for the first time in his career in a position where he could make a name for himself as a big-time quarterback on a big-time team means he's going to be jacked up. The Rams, we see this all the time in the NBA. You get all hyped up for the one matchup during the regular season between the Lakers and the Nets, right? But everybody's all hyped up, and then they're going to really hang their hopes and dreams on what happened in that game. The player's perspective is it's 1 of 82. You really want to get us hyped up? Wait till we play a 7-game series against that team when all the marbles are on the line. Then we'll talk about reality.
All right, San Francisco home for Green Bay. This is the Sunday night game. San Francisco at home, 3-point favorites, over under is 50. How you feeling about this, our resident Packer fan?
Well, I'm looking at a Niners bib right now, and my man right here in the chair should be burning that thing. He should throw it away. He should get something else on there because I don't know what that one is, but if it's a clown, you could trade it for the Niners thing, and it's the same thing. I mean, look, I'm a Packer fan. I'm born and raised, but I'm going to tell you right now, Packers are on a very good team because defensively, the Niners know what they need to do to beat the Packers. It's run the football. If they can run the football, if they can control the ball and the line of scrimmage, they're going to win the football game. Packers can't stop the run. They've spent a lot of money in a lot of places. Where they didn't that they needed to was their front seven, and that's going to hurt them. Aaron Rodgers is going to put points on the board, and he's going to do things because the offense is starting to get their timing back because they didn't play all preseason. But you know what? Kyle Shanahan's the best offensive play caller in this league right now, next with Andy Reid and probably Sean Payton. But his innovation and the way he does it, is going to keep the Packers defense on its heels, and the combination of being on your heels and not being very good and the Niners being at home on national TV, I think the Niners probably win this football game.
Yeah, 3 points too, pretty small spread. I hate what the Packers are defensively right now. I think they have pieces that they could figure it out. Although the 49er running game is a little concerning too. They love to run the football, but Mostert's hurt.
Right.
Eli Mitchell got banged up. They're not getting what they thought they'd get with the draft pick of Trey Sermon. So really kind of a revolving door right there at that running back spot for San Fran as well. You told me to bet San Fran, and usually I listen to fans to say to bet on the other team, so I'm probably leaning that way, where originally I was a don't touch it. Another great game, this one out of the AFC, Kansas City 1-1 after the loss last week against Baltimore. They're home for the Chargers, so two very good quarterbacks. Mahomes at the top of the game, the very best. Herbert, who looks like to be one of the better younger quarterbacks in the NFL. The Chiefs, 7-point favorites at Arrowhead. 54.5 points the total between two good offensive teams. I like Kansas City to bounce back.
Time.
Do they bounce back by 7, though?
Big time. You know why? Because they lost a game on national TV they should have won. And because it gave a little extra fuel to the fire of, one, they're beatable, and two, that the Ravens came out of that game with all the credit in the world, and Kansas City was left to pick up the pieces, and they don't like it. Because they know, again, they're not the Buccaneers either, but they were. And so they know now we're not the team that everybody's fearful of, and now we're talking about the Buccaneers thinking about going undefeated in a regular season where we're already got a loss for the Chiefs. Chiefs are not going to lose two in a row. They are going to come out with every offensive weapon, and we know they have more weapons and their offense is better, putting up points than anybody in the league.
They don't even need weapons. All they need is Kelce and Tyreek Hill. I mean, that's all they need.
But they have so much more than that.
They do,
too,
but
right?
They don't really use them.
So, well, that's the other thing. But, and again, you could say that they have good running backs and that Edwards-Helaire could carry the football, but he's the reason in part they lost that game last week because of the fact that he coughed it up. But he's going to want to do some things too. I think they're going to open up the playbook even more. They're going to pound the points on the scoreboard. They're going to go crazy. And you know what? For as good as the Chargers can be offensively, defensively, there's still a lot of questions, health-wise and otherwise, with getting guys back, getting guys coming off of injuries to stay healthy and continue to play at a high level. I think the Chiefs are going to come and make a statement.
All right, you talked me into Kansas City -7. I wasn't going to touch it, but you talked me into it. New England's home for New Orleans. This is kind of an interesting game in the sense of New Orleans more to me because the Saints were with Jameis Winston looked really good against your Packers in week one. Then they looked really bad last week against Carolina, a game, albeit where they were out about half a dozen offensive assistants. They're out about half a dozen players off that team as well. But they looked real. Like for if you talk about a team that has looked so helter-skelter in the first 2 weeks of the season, the Saints look great 1 week, and then they look terrible the next week.
Yeah, you know what? But you go, like you said, it's kind of an interesting look across the ledger. You got a quarterback with experience, but which Jameis Winston are we going to get, week one or week two? You got in New England, you got a Mac Jones situation where you got the starting job, but is it Mac Jones that's going to fall in line with all the other rookie quarterbacks where you can make one play that's really good, but you can also make a play that could cost your team because you're going to still be really bad and turn the ball over? So everybody's watching both quarterbacks. Then you're watching the health of both teams, but in particular, you're watching a veteran-laden team like the Saints. We know that in part it was because COVID's going around. They lost a lot of coaches, but they still lost a lot of veterans. They have veterans that are out. Davenport's not going to play. He's on the IL. You talk about Lattimore, who's got the broken thumb, but he's going to probably try and play through it. But the Saints have injuries to deal with as well. So it's going to be both teams trying to make a statement to prove that they belong and who's going to be able to create enough points on the board. But the bigger thing for me is going to be turnovers in this game. Jameis got back to his turnover ways last week. And we already know that Mac Jones, you know what, the Saints are going to, from a defensive perspective, from a front seven, they're going to put pressure on him, much like you saw with the Texans last night and what Carolina did. You're going to see a front seven from New Orleans basically say, hey, Mac Jones, you're a rookie. Beat me with the stuff that we're going to do to make you feel uncomfortable.
I don't think it's quite a playoff eliminator this early in the season. Both teams 1-1, but it's kind of close. It's kind of close. You drop to 1-2. You think one of those teams has playoff. Both of those teams have playoff aspirations. You fall to 1-2. You don't look great. Maybe it could be a playoff eliminator in week three of the NFL season. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. 713-780-ESPN if you want to get in. 713-780-3776. Coming up next, the Astros drop the series finale in Anaheim. They get set to face the A's tonight. We dive into the Astros next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.